The Conservatives are the largest party. They don't have an overall majority at this stage. The Prime Minister called this election because she wanted certainty and stability. This doesn't seem to look like certainty and stability.
Welcome to Polling Politics. This episode is sponsored by Smarkets. I'm Joe Twyman, co-founder and director of Delta Poll.
And I'm freelance journalist Marie LeConte.
Our first guest today is Professor Anand Menon. Hello.
Hiya, how are you doing?
We are all doing well. Would you like some champagne?
Oh, go on then.
I'll just pour you a glass.
He did pour a glass. I know you couldn't hear that because it was silent, but...
Yeah, I can't get it to pour any louder.
Fail.
Can I have some more as well?
Yeah, more for Marie. Have you opened your cracker, Anand?
I haven't, no. Who wants to pour my cracker with me? That's only half a cracker.
Because that's clearly been used. There's one in the box.
For those listening, the table is littered with already open...
For those of you watching in black and white.
Yeah, it's like being invited to dinner for leftovers.
Thank you.
If only we had any leftovers to give you. Ah,
yes.
Lost again.
Yeah, let me cheer you up with my joke.
Why is a horse like a cricket match?
Because it's fantastic, gripping.
It's got four
superb.
Legs. Does cricket have four legs? I don't know anything about cricket.
Because they get stopped by the rain. The rain.
Oh, rain.
Oh.
Wow. Tesco's really outdone themselves with this. Not only am I stopped by security for trying to buy this restricted item, I am also informed that the jokes were rubbish. So, where were we? Yes, Anand is Professor of European Politics and Foreign Affairs at King's College London, and since January 2014, he's been Director of the UK in a Changing Europe. He was Special Advisor to the House of Lords EU Committee and has previously been a lecturer at the University of Birmingham and University of Oxford. Tell us about UK in a Changing Europe.
And why the plot twist is that it's actually a changing UK in Europe.
Yeah, the first thing I was going to say was it's a crap name. And it's, but it was one of those things, you know, we had to come up with a name. We came up with a name at a time
it's
when...
It's got three good... It's got UK, Europe and changing.
It ticks all the boxes, I mean, yeah. That might be in the wrong order, that's all, yeah.
Just needs Bitcoin in for real.
And, yes.
Blockchain, UK in a blockchain Europe.
I mean, you've got to bear in mind, this was the world before. When actually it made a bit more sense than maybe it does now. I mean, this was, you know, coalition time before... Cameron won the election before we'd had a referendum, and it made more sense.
2014 seems like a long, long time ago now.
Well, actually, everything seems... I mean, one of the things we do at the end of each year is I write a review of the year, and I suddenly realise I can't remember anything before last week.
Well, that's great, because that's exactly what we got you on to talk about.
Oh, God.
So super.
This will indeed be, once again, a struggle of an episode. What was the impetus behind setting it up in the first place?
Well, there were two impetuses, I suppose. One was the ESRC, who were the Social Science Research Council, had done it before with Scotland. They'd set up something very similar to us for the Scottish referendum, and it had worked really well.
Scotland in a changing Europe.
That was... I can't
UK in a changing Scotland?
Changing Scotland in the UK.
Okay, we've got them all out of our system now. Good, I'm going to continue.
Oh, UK in a Scotland, Europe.
Oh,
done
good
now.
Lord. Anyway, the point was... Academics are very good at talking to themselves. They sometimes have knowledge that might be of relevance to people outside of universities, so why don't we fund them to talk to a broader audience? That was the rationale, basically. And they applied it to Scotland, to the project whose name I've now forgotten, embarrassingly. And after the Scottish referendum, with Europe on the horizon, with Cameron having promised a referendum, they thought, why don't we do this for UK-EU relations as well? So that was the impetus, I think.
And where are you based?
We're based on Kingsway in London, in the Policy Institute at King's College.
And when it started, did you have any expectation that it would prove to be quite so important in years to come?
Well, when I started, it was on the basis of me doing a day a week, basically reading what academic literature there was on, you know, UK relations with the EU and having a nice time.
How's that worked out?
Are you having
you?
A nice time?
Yes and no. I mean, it's fun.
As an academic, do you look at an event like this and think, wow, I am so lucky to be doing this at a time when this is happening?
Well, yes. And as you know, as a social scientist, this is just fantastic. But I have to say, the other thing about this is it's made me realise I was a pretty crap academic in the sense that I've got a very, very short attention span. What I'm doing now, I love, because I love the sound of my own voice. hence I'm here. I love going on the telly. You know, I love writing 800 words. I love doing the sort of stuff that academics aren't meant to do. And so this has been an absolute dream come true.
You view yourself as a think tank. Are you taking a line on the referendum itself?
Absolutely not. And it is the core condition of our funding that we have to remain impartial. We can't take sides. All we can do is report what the research says. Now, you know, that doesn't mean I have to say, well, I'm not sure whether a no-deal Brexit would be bad for the economy, because the evidence is absolutely clear on that. But it does mean that we can't express opinions on whether Brexit is a good thing or a bad thing.
And that brings us to the next question. Brexit, good or bad?
Well, I'm rather divided on that.
That's funny. So's the country. There's very clear data on this, and it's actually pretty stable. The country was divided at the time of the referendum. It remains divided now in pretty much the same way. 17th of January.
There's that gleam of the pollster's glee in your eyes. This is like the ideal situation, isn't it?
It's because it's Christmas. Absolutely. I look like this time every year. But January the 17th is the date that some have talked about as the moment at which the demographic churn will mean that the country flips to remain. Is that something that you hold much stock with too?
I think ultimately the uncertainty about what would happen in another vote is we don't know who would vote. I just think we have no clue about turnout in another referendum. Whether those leavers who are motivated to vote for the first time either in their lives or for years think, sod it, I might have guessed that they'd try and rob me, I'm not going to bother again. Whether some remainers think, actually, I'd like to stay, but this isn't fair. I mean, we just don't know what turnout will be. And the polls are so close, notwithstanding deaths and people becoming 18, that it's just simply too close to call. I mean, I watch with a mixture of admiration and contempt as people go around saying, I know what would happen if we had this vote again, because I just don't think anyone does.
No, and not unless they're trying to sell you something. It's obviously been an amazing year in terms of Brexit, and I mean amazing in the sense of horrific, terrifying, but at the same time, really quite interesting. What's your take on the last 12 months?
Well, there's a couple of things, I think. The first is just how fragile things you think are permanent can turn out to be. And that applies to all sorts of aspects of public life in this country.
Human
decency, the functioning of a two-party system, our stable constitution, British pragmatism.
Health.
Exactly. You name it, things that you thought were permanent aren't.
What about the nation's favourite quality street? Is that the one constant we can point to?
Well, it's the red
sea
one.
Of uncertainty?
It's the red round one.
Well, we'll find out at the end of the show. But sorry, carry on.
Well, I was just giving you the answer in advance, because that's just a slam dunk no-brainer.
We'll see if you...
And
I don't think
Strawberry Delight?
I don't think that's... It could well be.
We'll see if you're right at the end of the show.
There's no point making a face on a podcast, because no one will be able to know.
I hope I'm making a face loudly enough.
Well. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Carry on.
I can't remember the second thing now. It's obviously deeply irrelevant.
So this year has been... The uncertainty has characterised...
Well, 2016 to 2018 has been characterised by uncertainty. It's been characterised by a spectacularly low level of political debate, by rank dishonesty on all sides, and by a failure of imagination by political leaders.
Do you think things are going to get better? Marie's now exploring the strawberry cream and is not a fan. Alan, she's not a fan.
It has been a very long week. / a very long 10 weeks.
Well, she's French, isn't she? She probably wants dark
chocolate
or something weird.
Continue. Just don't mind me.
Do you think that 2019 will see all these things that you've talked about improve or deteriorate?
Well, what we've edged toward, 2018 is a year of edging timidly in little steps towards confronting trade-offs. And 2019 will see that process reach its conclusion in terms of Brexit, because the Prime Minister in particular, but politicians in general, are going to have to start acknowledging the fact that actually you can't have everything. And that if you do X, you won't be able to do Y. If you do A, it might lead to consequence B. And that is what the parliamentary debate in January is all about. Now, obviously, there'll still be rank hypocrisy and dishonesty everywhere. For instance, the government today published its white paper on immigration, in which it forgot to mention that there's an economic cost to this. So I'm not claiming we're going to enter a whole new era of evidence-based politics. But I think in Brexit in particular, what is happening in Parliament now is the debate is crystallising and the trade-offs are being discussed.
What would have been the key changes you and your academic colleagues would have suggested for the last year that you think would have improved the situation?
Well, actually, I sort of refer you to my previous answer in the sense that I think had there been more honesty from the Prime Minister from the start about the fact that, yes, we're going to honour the referendum, I take that to mean A, B and C, it will imply costs, we could have had a fuller, franker, more meaningful debate a lot earlier rather than doing it at the 11th hour as we are now.
I've just stopped caring about Brexit. I was not listening.
But you were nodding.
I'm sure it was interesting.
You were nodding. I'm sure you were nodding.
I am very good. Like, you know, I've always worked in fields that have a lot of men who think they're very clever. So I'm very good at nodding without listening.
Don't edit that. I told you I like the sound of my own voice. Shall I keep going?
So, 'cause I do as well. So I think I don't mind people pretending
to
listen to me.
You really want a guest who's going to sit here in silence, do you?
Who do you think is going to come out of this situation the best? Will Britain or will the EU?
Well, neither. The UK and a changing Europe is the ultimate profiteer from Brexit. We're going to come out of this brilliantly. Let me put that first and foremost. But, I mean, negotiation 101 says the bigger, stronger negotiator with the larger economy comes out best of a trade negotiation. So you can figure out for yourself what my answer is from that, that, you know, the EU holds the cards in this.
Do you think Theresa May's plan is to run down the clock over Christmas, put time pressure on everyone and hope that people fall in behind her deal?
Well, it's plan C, isn't it? I mean, but it is where we are now. But bear in mind, we haven't got much time left. If we want to leave, or if we're going to leave on the 29th of March, they've got to start putting the withdrawal agreement bill through Parliament by the end of January. So she hasn't got much clock left to run down if this is going to be done. But yeah, absolutely. What she wants to do is, if you think about it at the moment, Parliament is wrestling with four options, okay? One is accept the deal. The other is leave with no deal. The other is have a referendum and stop Brexit. And the other is have an alternative deal. That fourth one is disappearing from the scene as we're starting to discuss it seriously. We're starting to realise there is no other way of leaving the EU other than through this withdrawal agreement. And I think what the Prime Minister wants is to crystallise this as far as possible into as few choices as possible. In her ideal world, this would be a choice between no deal and my deal. But she's got those pesky second referendum people out there who are clouding the picture for her, which is, I think, why she's rather hoping that the Lib Dems put forward an amendment saying, can we have a second referendum? It gets voted down. Then she can say, OK, this is the binary choice.
But that's quite weird, isn't it? Because I feel like you'd assume, surely, that especially a Conservative Prime Minister would quite like to have that threat of a second referendum or no Brexit to kind of get her backbenchers quiet and say, actually, you know, this is growing. If you don't get behind me, this is an option that is on the table. And clearly that is kind of like growing in influence in Westminster. So I didn't really get how, yeah, like she seems to really hate it when I feel like if I were her, I would actually relish the idea of people starting to make a lot of noise about a second referendum. To be like, we'll see, you know, it is. Because I think that no deal will clearly, like, I think, as we've seen, has not really been scaring the hard Brexiteers that much. Because, you know, I think partly because they're refusing to see how bad a no-deal Brexit would be. So I think that actually, like, a second-round referendum is more of a threat to them.
You're right in the sense that she's definitely using that, which is why her language is of this deal, no deal, or no Brexit. So she's playing both sides, if you like, using a different threat. But in terms of the parliamentary numbers, there are relatively few MPs who would actually, when push comes to shove, want no deal. And I'm thinking about 10, 15 of them probably who really think this will be absolutely fine. But the real numbers, and that's what matters in Parliament, comes from the people who actually are a little bit scared of no deal and might take this deal over that. And that's where the potential for Labour abstentions and the like comes in. And I think that's where she's going to focus her fire because that's where there are more MPs.
You've obviously looked at the question of the EU and Brexit from a number of different angles as part of this academic team. If you had to say, how do you think Father Christmas would have voted in the EU referendum?
I think he would almost certainly have not voted.
Really?
Yes.
Really? That's interesting. On what basis do you say that?
On the basis that I hope he's got better things to do. You're packing my presents up.
Have you been a good boy this year?
Absolutely. I have to say, Brexit has changed my Christmas list, though, because after a week on College Green last week, my Christmas list is now made up entirely
of survival equipment.
Merino wool underwear. That's all I want for Christmas before the meaningful vote, so I never feel that cold again in my whole life.
I do wonder whether there is anywhere as cold on earth as College Green during an election stroke constitutional crisis.
I do have to say that it is one of those that I do love the sound of my own voice as well, and I love having attention, having an audience in general. But I have found that apparently I do have a limit, and that limit is College Green very early in the morning, where I have said no to everyone. Like, it could be literally anyone. I'll be like, no, absolutely not, it's just not happening. And it's kind of beautiful to see that there are limits to my own ego.
It is a bizarre convention that even the radio stations set up radio points on College Green right next to the studio that they have in order to report from there. But
I can report now that I witnessed none other than Adam Bolton effectively being driven from College Green this morning because of the noise of the protest. They decided to do the second half of the programme back in the studio.
Ah, right. Well, maybe that's what we're headed for, a year of protest. You're obviously a sophisticated guy, part of the intelligentsia. So, Die Hard.
Yes.
A film I'm assuming you're familiar with.
Very.
Do you regard Die Hard as a Christmas movie?
Yes.
And why do you say that?
Because there's Christmas in it.
Because there's Christmas in it.
Yeah.
So that for you
is the
prerequisite.
Yeah, I mean, watching a film at Christmas with Christmas in it is fine. It's a Christmas movie.
And what proportion of the public do you think share your view?
Well, the public are idiots, we know that, so probably very few of them.
Very few is, that's...
Let's say 20%.
20%. Well, we'll find out if you're right at the end of the show. Alan, thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Mother. We're joined now on our festive roundup by Subject from Smarket. Hello, Subject.
Hi there.
Ho, ho, and thrice ho. We're going to be talking about some of the bets that came off, some of the things that didn't, and we're going to be looking forward to perhaps some things to look at next year. Should we start with the United States first?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Donald Trump has been never out of the news this whole year, and we've closed a number of markets on him, everything from his Supreme Court pick to what colour tie he'll be wearing when he arrives at his non-visit in the UK and where he'd be visiting, going down right through to the midterm elections where his impact was really felt.
Yeah, really big event, that. Probably the biggest event of the year. How did the betting go on that?
Well, our market was following the general trend and actually got it right, which was that the Democrats would take the House and the Republicans would keep hold of the Senate. I mean, the Senate was maybe less of a knife edge because the seats that were up were Republican ones and the Democrats had more to lose from them. But it was interesting to follow on the night that the 538 predictions at one point flipped around and predicted the other way. And we saw massive betting on our markets following that. So people were trying to follow the trend, but actually in the end it all worked out.
It all worked out in the end. And speaking of all working out in the end, there of course were many suggestions that Donald Trump might not make it to the end of this year in office. How did that play out in terms of the trends?
Yep, we had a market on the articles of impeachment, and obviously that he has not been impeached in 2018. We had him leaving.
Well, not yet. There's still a few days.
There's still a few days. Still possible. So far, we've not closed that market. There's been many looks at whether he's going to go. And every time he says something or does something outrageous, there's a little kind of frisson on the market. But actually, quite generally steady. He's destined to make it to the end of his first term at the very least.
Right, so looking at next year then, there's obviously no elections, no big elections in the US, but there is still a question about whether Donald Trump will survive. And you think, or your markets think that he will.
Our market on whether Donald Trump is going to survive or for how long, really, 2020 or later is at 78%. 29 exit is at 23%. And if you really are optimistic that he might go in 2018, you could potentially make a lot of money because he's on that at 0.71%.
but you'd have to have a really strange state of affairs for him to not gather. Moving on to the UK then, it's been quite a year. Obviously, we started 12 months ago with turmoil around Brexit and nobody really sure what was going to happen. And now the situation is obviously extremely different. Theresa May has survived, however, and we assume is safe safe at least for the Christmas period, if not until New Year. What have been the most interesting markets coming out of UK politics this year?
Well, Theresa May not going has obviously taken everyone by surprise. There's been so many challenges that I think many of the other prime ministers that we've known in our lifetimes would have gone by now. But no, she's hung on. Interestingly enough, though, her cabinet has been the most changed cabinet that we've seen in a long, long time. I was looking back over our markets and we've closed the next cabinet minister to resign market 6 times this year.
Wow.
Including twice on one day, giving us our shortest running market, which only ran for 3 hours when we had the two ministers, cabinet ministers going one after the other.
And what about Brexit? Where do the markets lie on that in terms of what's happened and where things will go next time?
Smarkets has the most comprehensive markets on Brexit. We've got, I think, 9 markets running currently. An interesting one we've got is another in-out referendum before 2020. And that was trending towards no for a long time. And it's still at no with 62%. But actually, yes has shot up. It's now trending at 41%, which means that, you know, yes is at its highest point since we started that market.
And what level was it at the beginning of the year?
22%.
Oh, wow. So a really, really big change there.
And it's all happened recently as well. So there's been a massive shift towards whether we actually do the whole referendum again, and maybe even on a 2-option referendum.
Well, if that did happen, I think it would inevitably call into question the leadership of the Conservative Party. And although a formal leadership challenge can't take place for another 12 months, it could be the case that Theresa May resigns or chooses to no longer be in the position. What do the markets look like for who's going to take over, and how has that changed this year?
Well, that's been one of our most interesting markets. The next permanent leader of the Conservative Party after Theresa May has taken in over £1 million, and we've had constant shifts between all the different players on that market. There's not been one candidate. I mean, for a long time, it was Jacob Rees-Mogg. I don't think that was necessarily sensible money, but he was in the news an awful lot. We're back today, and you know, today only, if you check it, I'm sure it'll be different, to Boris Johnson at 14%, Sajid Javid at 11%, Dominic Raab at 11%, Jeremy Hunt at 10%, and Michael Gove at 8%.
So actually, I mean, really close between all of those people. I mean, Boris a little bit in front, but the rest really close.
They're all flouting their credentials. We saw this at the Conservative Party conference early in the year. We're seeing it now with lots of kind of announcements from each of their ministries about what they would do or how they would do things in future. I mean, they're all also trying to support Theresa May as much as they can publicly, but it's also in the way that's kind of suggesting that they might be a good candidate to replace her.
And looking forward to next year, inevitably the key question is about Brexit, when it will happen, that sort of thing. What do the markets show about that?
So the market on Brexit date is really interesting. We have had, obviously, January to April 2019, which is the official date, as the highest contract in that market for a long, long period of time, reaching a peak of around 62%. And recently it's dropped. I think only last week it went down to like 49%. It's still on top. It's just above 50% now, but it's, you know, one of the lowest points it's been all year. So we're seeing that there is confidence that it still might happen on that date, but not as much confidence as there has been early in the year.
And do you have a market on the type of Brexit that we will see?
Yes, we do. We have the market on whether we'll have a no-deal Brexit or not. Our market on the no-deal Brexit is coming out now at around 80% for no and around 26% for yes. So it looks like that we won't have, according to our market, a no-deal Brexit, which can mean two things. One, that we actually get a deal with the EU before the date, or there is no Brexit by the date.
Ah, right. So both count both count against it.
Looking across to whether the House of Commons is going to pass that deal, as much as it is or as much as it will be by the time they get to see it, we're pretty strongly saying no. And by pretty strongly, I'm saying 99.99%. But, you know, yes, there is a contract as well. So maybe things can change. The DUP can be swung around. Labour backbenchers could be forced to support the government in some way. And that could all change.
Stranger things have happened. Sajid, thank you. And thank you again to Smarkets. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I was brought up in France, like, I can do this in my sleep. Hey!
Hey!
Ooh! I got a nice ring.
And I haven't won anything. I don't think this has any... Oh, no, it does. It has not so much a deck of cards as
what, just
three
a few cards.
Three cards. Ho, ho, ho! It's the Polling Politics Christmas special. Marie, what do you get if you cross Santa with a duck?
I don't want to know.
A Christmas quacker.
No, Joe. I'm leaving.
That's what it says. These crackers were very cheap, but we're all here in Delftpoll Towers with our Christmas hats. Our Christmas hats on. It's a great day to celebrate.
Christmas hats on and nothing else.
We've got the champagne popping. We've got the Quality Street out. This is going to be great. When I was buying the crackers earlier, I discovered that they are a restricted item at Tesco. You need to get permission from
really?
The store staff
really?
Before they let you buy crackers.
What's the criteria?
I've no idea.
Is it 16?
I've no idea. They just said that's fine. They looked me over, decided I was the type of person who could buy crackers from the self-service thing.
Oh my God, I bet I'm going to get fucking ID'd buying them. I was refused. Earlier this year, I had the flu, so I went to Sainsbury's to buy some Sudafed. And apparently you have to be 16 to buy Sudafed, and the woman would not trust that I was over 16. So the only thing I had was my NUJ card. And so this is like normally not a thing like I pull often, but I was like, look,
do you know
would I be
I
a member of a union and a professional journalist if I was 15? And she's like, nah, that's not enough. And so I went home without my Sudafed.
Oh, dear. I'm so sorry to hear that. Joining us now is Sienna Rogers. Now, Sienna is editor of Labour List. She previously worked for Tulip Sadiq and is a former acting online features editor for House and Garden magazine. Hello. Hello, Sienna.
I don't know why you're mentioning that.
Oh, like, it gets much, much worse.
So he does a thing that's basically, he doesn't want to call it that, but it's really like light stalking of our guests. Right, so yeah, course. Just be ready.
Low level stalking. Thank you for joining us for our Christmas special. We're cracking open the champagne, so do help yourself. Unfortunately, the Secret Santa is only going to involve Marie and I.
And it's just one way even then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just kind of like threatening. I didn't know sort of like present giving could be threatening, but there's a vague air of threat to that present he's apparently bought me weeks ago.
You've never seen threatening present giving before? Oh, it happens a lot in families. Moving on. Sienna, we want to talk about next year. Mm. Not the year that's gone, but where we're headed and what that means for the country and perhaps for the Labour Party as well. What do you think we can look forward to in 2019?
Well, we've just discovered that we're going to be looking forward to a Peterborough by-election.
And who wouldn't look forward to a by-election?
Isn't it a hyper-marginal? So I think that'll be fun.
Well, exactly. It's going to be really close, and actually the result will be really interesting. I can't say I've ever been to Peterborough before. I can't say I'm particularly excited of spending weekends there, but I'm going to be. So that's one thing. But maybe also a general election.
And how likely do you think a general election is in 2019?
I think it's pretty likely.
Talk us through the pathway for how we get there.
I'm thinking, yes, no deal is the default, but Theresa May doesn't want that to be her legacy. In the end, her promise to not extend Article 50 is going to be meaningless. And basically, I think the most likely outcome is that a version of her deal will pass, whether that's through Labour saying, look, it's so close, we need to avoid no deal, let's just get it through, or Labour MPs rebelling and the leadership maybe not trying so hard to stop them from doing that. So extension of Article 50, deal passing, and then the DUP withdraws support, and then we've got general election. That's what I'm saying.
It seems like a possible outcome. When you look at the polling on this, you find that the country actually is in support of a second general election in the next few months.
Oh my God, yet again betrayed by the public.
What can I say? 48% support it, 38% oppose it, which is interesting. You will not be surprised to hear there's quite a difference when it comes to the party breakdown on this. Fewer than a third of Conservatives support a general election, as opposed to nearly three quarters of Labour supporters. And here's a surprise, the Lib Dems are somewhere in between the two. 51% supporting. Marie, how likely do you think a general election is next year?
I don't know. I'm not sure there will be one. I think that, again, you know, the thing about Theresa May is that she's not strong, but she's stable. And we have been talking about, I think, for a long time of, you know, like she's about to collapse or there's about to be another general election, etc. And that still hasn't happened. So like partly for the sake of argument, but also genuinely, I'm not sure. Like, I'm not saying there definitely will not be one, but I think it's more likely that there will not be one.
That's quite Lib Demy answer of you.
Should we record all possible outcomes and just get Nick to edit it to make us look like...
I've got the yellow mic, so I kind of feel like I should be on round. I'm not sure there's actually that much of an appetite for a general election, even the Labour benches. So I think a lot of Labour MPs publicly will go like, ooh, like, you know, what we need is a general election, like Corbyn, PM, etc. I actually think privately a lot of these Labour MPs don't really have their heart into it.
But if it came to a no-confidence vote, obviously they'd have to vote for one.
Oh, yeah. But I think that in terms of that internal thing, I'm not sure how many of them are pushing, like internally for that election.
There were suggestions there'd be a no-confidence vote before Christmas. I guess we're out of luck on that one now. But if a general election were to take place next year, what do you think the outcome would be?
Labour would obviously win.
Okay, but thinking realistically now, what do you think the outcome would be?
I do think Labour would improve on its 2017 performance. Obviously, it depends what the economic consequences are of the deal. It's basically everything depends on Brexit. It depends where the economy is at. But I think Labour could have some really strong messaging, and the Tories, you know, losing their reputation for coherence and not being a government of chaos, they've lost that.
Because at the moment, the Conservatives are still ahead on leadership, on who would make the best Prime Minister. Leadership ratings, how satisfied people are, and also what has traditionally been the all-important question of economic confidence and whether people would prefer a government led by Philip Hammond and Theresa May as Prime Minister, or John McDonnell and Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister. And so do you think that the situation has changed and those things aren't as important as they once were? Do you think that Brexit will change that? Or do you think that people just change their mind in a campaign?
On the competence question, as I say, I think that reputation has eroded. Obviously, polling still shows that the Tories have a better reputation on that. But, I mean, last year, yeah, Theresa May's whole pitch was strong and stable, and yet she totally crumbled during the campaign. And Labour obviously relies a lot on, you know, that gap between Labour and Tories widening during a campaign, an election campaign, because, you know, it gets a fair hearing in the media, there's balance, all those sort of factors. But I suppose when we're talking about leadership, in that situation that I outlined, there's going to be a different Tory leader, we're thinking.
Who would you least like to go up against? Marie, what do you think? If you were Labour, who would you least like to go up against?
And you do know I have to say Alan Mack. That is my answer to everything. I'm not sure, I'm trying to think. I think of the people who are currently running, said to be running for leader, I can't really think of one Labour should be particularly worried about. I think in terms of the new generation, there are people, obviously is the cliche to say, but I think Ruth Davidson is one person who actually could be good. I think people like Tom Tugendhat, obviously not now, but soon, is someone who I think Labour could be worried about. But yeah, no, I think in the immediate sort of, you know, you're like Jeremy Hunt and kind of like Sajid Javid, I'm not really sure these are people who'd have Labour quaking in their boots.
I think Boris Johnson is pretty worrying, but I don't think he'd get to the final
pretty
two.
Pretty worrying as an opponent, or just pretty worrying
as an opponent? Well, all of those things. Worrying generally. But yeah, I don't think he'd get to the final two, so he wouldn't be put to Tory members, so he wouldn't get a chance to take the leadership. But maybe Dom Raab. I actually think, you know, he's quite good looking.
He's a nutter, isn't he? And that is a general, like, professional opinion.
He's a no-dealer. He's a managed no-dealer.
But also, isn't he, like, he's weirdly sexist, which I think gets forgotten about. So when was this? I think last week or 2 weeks ago, when Amber Rudd, I think, hit out at her male cabinet colleague, saying, you know, there's been a lot of flailing from male MPs. And basically, anything like Dom Raab was like, well, that was pretty sexist. So it's just,
yeah,
oh my God.
He was crying about reverse sexism.
But yeah, but I feel like kind of coming back on like the potential election of 2019, I still feel like there are some people who voted for Labour in the last election who Labour should be worried about now. So like, I think there are the ones who, because obviously Theresa May was standing on a platform of like a very hard Brexit. So people who maybe didn't love Labour but thought, you know what, actually I don't want a super hard Brexit, so I might vote for Labour as a one-off. Or people who, again, because it was looking at the beginning like it might be like the Tory landslide of a generation. So who again were like, you know, not a massive fan of Jeremy Corbyn's, but actually I also do not want a Tory majority of like 200, so I might vote Labour this one time. And so I think there are a few kind of like groups like this who voted in 2017 for Labour, and I'm not saying they won't again, but I'm not sure it's a given. So I feel like there is some confidence on the Labour side, which worries me a bit on their behalf.
What do you think the result would be?
Well, obviously I think the best possible result would be some seats changing hands, but ultimately the exact same amount of seats for each party. Like, that is really what I want, like, truly in my heart of hearts, because that'd be very, very funny. I think the Tories might lose a few more seats, which actually that would be, like, in terms of, like, parliamentary arithmetic. I have no idea how that worked, really. But I could see, yeah, Labour maybe gaining, like, 3 seats from the Tories with, like, a few other seats just, like, changing hands and not changing the overall arithmetic. I think the SNP could probably lose a few seats as well, maybe to like both Labour and the Tories.
Well, in the polls, 13% think that we would be headed for an outright majority for the Conservatives, 10% an outright majority for Labour, but then 54% combined think a hung parliament of some description. That seems to be, at least if the public are to be believed on this, where we're headed.
DUP, Plaid Cymru, Lib Dem coalition is happening.
And what's interesting is that figure is split down the middle. So it's 27% who say Conservatives will be the biggest party, 27% who say Labour will be the biggest party.
That is incredible.
Yeah, and so that may be where we're headed. Sienna, we've talked about Brexit extensively. What's going to happen with that? Are we going to leave? Are we going to remain? Are we going to have a second referendum?
I think we're going to leave, and I don't think there will be another referendum. At the moment, you know, Chuka was saying last weekend, you know, he's obviously a sort of leading proponent of People's Vote campaign, but he was saying, no, we don't have the numbers at the moment. I mean, he's saying that MPs will change their minds, but actually the Tories seem to be rolling back on their support for another referendum rather than it actually extending. I mean, over the last kind of week, we've actually seen that support decrease.
I sort of agree. I don't know, I feel like talking to people as well, I think that, and again, with the heavy caveat that all of us have been consistently wrong about stuff for the past few years, but the chat does seem to be at the moment, like, quietly, that, like, the deal might actually go through Parliament eventually. Like, there might be some teeny cosmetic changes, but actually there'll be a lot of people either worried about Brexit not happening or a second referendum or a no-deal Brexit, and so actually would just end up voting for it. So I reckon that it could still squeak through the Commons.
Nearly one in five of the public doesn't know where Brexit, they think Brexit will be going. But actually, a plurality do think that we will remain, ultimately, if a second referendum were to take place. And the country's pretty much divided down the middle on whether to support that second referendum or not.
There's a recurring theme
yeah,
to
it. Basically, the best you can hope for if you're a politician is that only 50% of the country will hate you, which I think is an interesting position.
That's my approach to house parties.
Sienna, you went to the French school in.
Wow, you do like.
I did warn.
I went to the French school in London and studied French for both GCSE and A level.
Yeah.
Would you and Marie like to conduct the next stage of this interview en français?
Pourquoi pas? You would say that. D'accord. Effectivement, je voulais juste m'excuser pour le comportement de Joe, mais
les gilets jaunes. On parle de ça.
mais c'est comme Brexit en même temps, mais c'était marrant, c'est quand il y a deux semaines, un truc comme ça, je parlais à mon père au téléphone, t'as dit, mais du coup Brexit, qu'est-ce que tu penses qui va se passer et tout, j'ai aucune idée, honnêtement aucune idée, mais, mais sinon, non, Brexit on s'en fout, les gilets jaunes, qu'est-ce qui va se passer, t'en penses quoi, aucune idée.
So moving on to Quality Street, the staple of British Christmases and the common present when you don't really know what to get your neighbours, etc., etc. Sienna, do you have a favourite Quality Street?
I like the triangle, the green triangle that's praline.
The green triangle?
Like a half French person I am.
Very interesting. And what do you think the nation's favourite Quality Street is?
Oh, they have terrible taste. I reckon it's the big purple one.
You know, you can visit more often. Not much more often. But okay. You're absolutely right. The purple one,
I think
the nation's favourite by some distance. 37% chose the purple one. The green triangle, your favourite, in second place at 27%. Marie, you don't look impressed.
So, no, I was just looking at the different flavours and they, like, strawberry delight.
It's so bad.
Like, that sounds so rank.
Well, that's four.
Orange chocolate crunch. That is repulsive.
Oh, that's right down at the bottom. Only toffee penny, which nobody likes because
really?
It sticks your teeth together.
I was about to say that was the only one that sounded okay to me.
And coconut eclair. That's the nation's least favourite Quality Street.
Wait, so hang on. Right. The purple one is just called the purple one.
Mm.
What's in it? Should I taste
it? A big nut.
I'm going to taste it. Knowing that I don't like chocolate, I'm not sure what I'm expecting here, but... that's confusing.
This is great radio. It's going to be even better when we get onto the Secret Santa.
Oh, cool, I like that. That's right.
Right, Marie, why don't you eat one of all the different types and then you can decide which is your favourite. I think I like the purple one best. But
I'm into it.
Don't look at me in that tone of voice.
I'm not trying the strawberry one, by the way.
To have two French or pseudo-French people here inevitably raises...
pseudo-French. And I guess if we're both half French, we technically have like one French person here.
So I'll ask the one French person that we have here. When it comes to Christmas lunch and the composition of said meal, what do you think has to feature in your ideal Christmas lunch?
Roast potatoes.
So roast potatoes, the nation's favourite as well, 85%.
In the Arga.
In the yogurt, have more champagne.
My family Christmas lunch is like white sausages with like apple compote. Like apple, like, what is it called?
I love apple compote.
Yeah, it's just compote, isn't it?
It is compote, right? That's a thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a thing. It's not something you have at Christmas lunch.
That with white sausages. Like, that's Christmas
with white
lunch
sausages.
On the 25th, yeah.
There's no, white sausages are the ones that have gone off in the fridge, aren't they?
Oh, God. But yes, no idea. That is.
Do you wrap the sausages in bacon?
No!
obviously
well, if
not.
You did, that would be popular with 61% of the British public.
I know, I hate those because it's like pigs in blanket, but then occasionally there's like a weird sweet thing between the bacon and the sausage.
That's devils on horseback, isn't it? That's prunes wrapped in bacon. That's something
different.
But
occasionally,
entirely.
If there's some sort of sauce, I hate it. I hate it. I hate this country.
Now, cranberry sauce. What do we think about that?
Nah, not a fan.
Not unless you've got a urinary tract infection.
No.
38% of people choose that.
What? But it reminds you of having a UTI.
Well, it's maybe awful. That's what people like.
A friend's housemate once had a UTI. And
since we're on to the UTI section of the show.
Was told to buy cranberry juice
was this
to
at
get
Christmas?
Rid of it. So it was not. And apparently, yeah, and she was like, doesn't work. And eventually the housemates and my friend found out that she'd just go like in the bathtub and like pour the cranberry juice. So that's my contribution to this conversation.
I'm not sure that's directly relevant to either polling or politics, but it is a great, great story. Imagine what she'd known if she'd known about cranberry sauce. Interestingly, Turkey, only 52% of people would choose turkey.
Beef, except Paul Bird.
Beef on 10%. Chicken on 8%. I don't know why you'd have chicken when you... I mean, if you're going to have chicken, you might as well have turkey.
Where's,
it is Christmas.
Nut roast?
Vegetarian alternatives are all put into one and they're 8%. Goose at 6%. Ham stroke gammon at 3%. Pork at 3%. So turkey certainly wins out. Brussels sprouts, yes or no?
No.
It's a definite yes, 62%. Gravy?
Yes.
No. That's a 75%. Stuffing?
Only if it's nice.
Yeah, agree.
Okay, we can agree on that. So when we do this next year around my house, we can have just stuffing and roast potatoes.
Yeah.
Sienna, do you think Father Christmas would have voted leave or remain in the EU referendum?
Oh, God, that's interesting.
Is it?
Yeah, because I'm thinking of all sorts now.
He is elderly.
I think he's a Lex tier.
Ooh, I quite like that. I agree, actually. I was going to go for Remain, but I reckon that, yeah. Father Christmas is an Exeter.
Explain to both our listeners at home what that is. And me.
What an Exeter is?
Yeah.
A left-wing Brexiteer. Yeah. Basically, Corbyn is the House of Commons, like Santa Claus, so yeah.
So there we have it. The public disagrees. 63% say he would have voted Remain. But then, you know, international travel is a big part of his job. There we go. The song Stay Another Day by those scallywags East 17. Do you count that as a Christmas song?
Yeah, I'm quite liberal with what I count as a Christmas song.
So you say yes to Stay Another Day. It doesn't really mention Christmas as such.
What
about the power of love?
It's about the spirit of Christmas. Yeah, power of love. You just chuck it all in. Yeah.
Anything that's basically played on magic.
Yeah, exactly.
The public... It divides almost in the way that they divide on Brexit. 29% say yes, 34% say no, 37% say they don't know.
Just as complex an issue, so that makes sense.
Yes, and the film Die Hard.
Definitely a Christmas film, there's no debate.
Yeah,
there.
Agreed.
I agree with that as well, but the public, I mean, what do they know? 52% says it's not a Christmas film.
I mean, then again, I feel like, so Sienna is really liberal when it comes to Christmas songs. I'm really liberal when it comes to Christmas movies, where for me, like Lord of the Rings, Christmas movies, Harry Potter, Christmas movies.
Those are movies that are on at Christmas.
Yeah, so they're Christmas movies.
That's not the same.
They are. I have already rewatched all the Harry Potters this month coming up to Christmas.
That's right.
My Harry brother Potter's and I will probably rewatch Lord of the Rings when I'm back home. Like, yeah, these are Christmas movies.
I mean, obviously I'm too old to know this, but doesn't Harry get his letter at Christmas?
No,
he gets on his birthday.
Okay. Our thanks to Sienna. See you next year. And finally, we have the Polling Politics Secret Santa for this year.
I was not aware of, so I did not buy Joe a present.
That's why it was a secret. That's how it works, isn't it? No, anyway, so Marie, I've bought you a present for this year. I'm not sure how this is going to work on a podcast, but here's your present.
This is so ominous. What the fuck is that? What? How? What? What is this?
Happy Christmas, Marie. And to find out what it is that I've bought for Marie for Christmas, you'll have to go onto our Twitter feed or Instagram page, because I just don't think words can do it justice.
What the fuck?
That's all for 2018 from Polling Politics. Thanks very much for joining us. Thank you to Smarkets as well. We'll see you all for season 3 starting in January. Until then, ho ho ho. Please remember to like, subscribe, review, all these different things that help people hear about us. And do tell all of your friends and many of the people that you don't know, even if you haven't enjoyed the podcast. This is a Poddo podcast produced by Nick Hilton, and our theme tune is by Joe Button.
For more details, go to podopods.com, and for sales and advertising, email nick@podopods.com.
And yes, that's spelled podotpods.com.